Good morning. Thank you, everybody, for coming out. I say good morning in the sense of that good morning to you now. However, as we know, this was not necessarily so good a morning. And in fact, although today is actually, again, as Rabbi Tochiner mentioned, the 18th of Tammuz, the 17th of Tammuz was a date on which a number of tragic events happened, as outlined in the Mishnah. Specifically, there were two events that related to the Second Temple and leading up to the destruction of the Second Temple, although other ones, you know, certainly could fit in that. One is that the Tamid, the daily offering, stopped being offered at that point. The Romans prohibited it. We also know that the walls of the city of Jerusalem, which will be relevant to our topic, were breached on this day, according to tradition, and also in the Second Temple. And before I begin, I'd just like to make one disclaimer, which is that nothing that I say here should have the weight of practical halacha. This is not to be taken as halacha guidance of any sort as to what people can do, should do, must do, or anything of that nature. Obviously, if you have any particular questions, they should be forwarded to a rabbi, but simply to discuss one of the areas of halacha that we do see, one of the areas of law that we see that actually relates to the destruction of the temple and to the mourning that we have over Jerusalem, not just on fast days like today, but really something that would potentially be relevant year-round. And we'll begin with what's one of the most, if not the most, famous verse that discusses the destruction of Jerusalem. This is in Tehillim 137:5-6 in Psalms, the one opening with Al Naharot Bavel, by the rivers of Babylon. And we're told, Im Eshkachech Yerushalayim, if I forget thee, Jerusalem, Tishkach Yemini, in source number one, let my right hand forget her cunning, whatever it is that if I forget Jerusalem, let my right hand forget, so to say, meaning we cannot forget Jerusalem. Tidbak lishoni lechi ki im lo eskerechi, let my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth, if I remember thee not. Im lo a'alet Yerushalayim al rosh simchati, if I not set Jerusalem above my chiefest joy. And there are a number of ways of interpreting this verse, one way as we see in the translation here that we just read, but it holds as an ideal that we should always be remembering Jerusalem even above our joy that we may see. We can't really have joy nowadays with the loss of the temple that we should be mourning regularly. And as Rashi notes, what would this mean? And Rashi is basing himself on comments of the Talmud and elsewhere. He says, "Zichron evel churbana, the remembrance of the mourning of the destruction of the temple, a'aleh, I will raise it, la'askiro berosh kol simchatis, should say at the head of all my celebrations." It doesn't necessarily need to be at the start, of course, but meaning even at the height of my celebration, someone can be having such an emotional time in this day and age where there's a wedding, there's a simcha, people are happy, people are rejoicing, people feel accomplished, but that moment of happiness must always be taken with a grain of salt. That grain of salt being that we no longer have the temple, we no longer have the Beit HaMikdash, and always, as Rashi points out, even at the height of celebration, we must make an effort to remember. Just as we've been told, we cannot forget Jerusalem. Im lo ezkerechi, we're also told again, if I don't remember Jerusalem, this thing should happen. And again, we've always got to be focused around that at all times of happiness. And with this in mind, and this is in fact actually cited by the Gemara, that the Talmud, the section from Talmud that we're about to read, there are many, many, many rules, so to say, or at the very least suggestions within the halacha as to when we should apply this verse. When should we say that, okay, now is an appropriate time to remember the destruction during a happy occasion? Can anybody think of any examples? I'd be happy to take from the audience. When is it that we might recall Jerusalem at our happy times? Okay, at a wedding. And how do we do that? It's interesting. We smash a glass that sort of startles us in some way to remember it. Most notably now, people have the custom of singing this particular pasuk, Im Eshkachech Yerushalayim, or actually two pasukim. At that point, that's a way that, again, even at what we would consider the highest joy that we might experience, we will be sort of dampening it in that way. Yes? So that's exactly what we're going to be talking about today. There is also a custom as what people refer to as the Zecher Lechurban, the memorial or remembrance of the destruction of the temple. And that is that there, at the very least, is a practice among many people, and we're going to look through the sources for it, that in a house we leave a section of our house to remind us of the destruction of Jerusalem. And how does that come about? So let's take a look at source number 3. I'm going to read, you know, from the Hebrew, but translated according to the English, which you should have in front of you. So if you're more comfortable with the English translation, you can simply turn the page. If you'd like to follow along in the Hebrew, you can, of course, stay on, you know, be on the page that we're currently on in source number 3 at the beginning. But let's take a look at that section. Tana Rabbanan, the sages taught in the Tosefta and Sota, Lo yasud adam et beito besid. A person may not plaster their house with plaster. Okay, they shouldn't properly finish their house. Vim irev bochol, however, if there was sand mixed into it, o tevin, or if there was straw mixed into this plaster, meaning it doesn't look as nice, it dulls its luster, then mutar, that would be permitted. It would be permitted to finish a house in that way because it's not as bright and shiny and brand new and fancy. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, Irev bochol hareis et tarkasid. He says if he mixed sand into it, it is a white cement, tarkasid, which is of a higher quality than standard plaster, and therefore if you add it in this chol, ve'asur, it will be considered prohibited to, again, plaster one's house in this fashion. Tevin, however, Rabbi Yehuda agrees that if you mixed in straw, mutar would be permitted. Okay, so this is essentially a statement from the sages telling us that one shouldn't finish their house, one shouldn't finish their basement. When you're doing renovations, it can't be completely done. And the Gemara now goes on. The Talmud goes on to tell us a little bit more about this and gives us a background with the following discussion. We have another saying of the sages. The sages taught in a Braita, also in a Tosefta and Sota, just 2 Toseftas later. Tana Rabbanan, the rabbis learned, Kishechara Beit HaMikdash. When the temple was destroyed, Bashnia the second time, which again is something that we're commemorating today, the beginning of that destruction and the stages of that destruction, Rabu Prushin B'Yisrael, there was an increase in the number of people who decided to take a step back and to be ascetics. And what they did was, Shelo le'echol basar v'shelo lishtot yayin, whose practice was to not eat meat and to not drink wine. Nitfalahen Rabbi Yehoshua. Rabbi Yehoshua joined them to discuss this practice of theirs. Amar lahen, and he said to them, Banai, my children, mipnei ma iatem ochlim basar ve'en atem shotin yayin. Rabbi Yehoshua asked them, he says, my children, for what reason do you not eat meat and do you not drink wine? Well, they said to him, Amrulo, nochal basar shemimenu makrivin al gamei mizbeach, v'akshav batel? Shall we eat meat from which offerings were sacrificed upon the Mizbeach, and now it has ceased to exist? Now that we have no Beit HaMikdash, where meat was brought on a regular basis, how can we continue to eat meat? And in fact, although obviously we don't do this all year long, as the Gemara itself will explain, this is something that we keep at the height of our mourning, whether that be the week which Tisha B'Av falls for some communities, or for others, you know, 9 days from the beginning of the month of Av, all the way through the ninth of it. You know, how can we possibly eat meat in this time? So too, nishte yayin shem naschin al gabei hamizbeach, can we really drink wine, which was poured, libations were poured on the altar? Again, so too then. So Rabbi Yehoshua replies to them, and he says, amar lahem imkein lechem lo nochal, shekvar bat luminachot. He says, well, then maybe you shouldn't eat bread too, because bread was also brought. If so, we'll not eat bread either, since the meal offerings that were offered upon the altar have ceased. And they replied, and they said, you know what? You're right. You're correct. Efshar b'peirot. They said, it's possible to subsist just by eating fruit, just with produce. So he said to them, peirot lo nochal shekvar batlu bikurim. But the fruits, those fruits, you can't eat those either. We will no longer eat of the produce of the 7 species from which the first fruits were brought. Why? Because we had the bikurim, the first fruits. As it is possible to subsist with other produce. We can have all the rest of the fruits. Finally, Rabbi Yehoshua responds to them, Mayim lo nishteh, shekvar batel nisucha mayim. He says, well, there was pouring of the water on Sukkot, so maybe we shouldn't drink water anymore. And at that point, shatku. They were silent as they realized they could not survive without water. Amar Lahani said to them, Banai, my children. Rabbi Yeshua said to them, my children, Bova Amar Lachem, let me come and tell you something. Shaloli itabel kol ikar I efshar. To not mourn at all is impossible, as the decree was already issued and the temple has been destroyed. Shekfar nigzarag zira ol itabel. Shekfar nigzarag zira is again the decree was already made, the temple has been destroyed. Ul hitabel yoter midai, on the other hand, to mourn too much, to mourn excessively, as you are doing, efshar, that's also impossible. Shein gozrin gzira la tzibur elam kein rov tzibur yecholin la'amod ba. Sages don't issue a decree upon the public unless the majority of the public is able to abide by it. And the Gemara brings a pasuk of this: you are cursed with the curse, yet you rob me, even this whole nation. Meaning, it has to be something that is for the entire nation, indicating the prophet rebukes the people for neglecting observances only if they were accepted by the whole nation. So Rabbi Yehoshua continues: what do we do in the absence of being able to follow all of these other stringencies, and saying, well, in the times of the Beit HaMikdash, we would have meat on the Mizbeach, so we won't have meat. In the times of the Beit HaMikdash, we drink water, so we won't drink water. Rabbi Yeshua says, that's not the case. We shouldn't be doing that. What should we be doing, though, says Rabbi Yehoshua? And he continues. Elakach amru chachamim. What is the replacement for all of these practices? Something which the entire community can do, says Rabbi Yehoshua, and will still memorialize the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, says Rabbi Yehoshua. This is what the sages said. Sad adam et beito besid. A person may plaster his house with plaster. Umishayer bo davar mu'at. But he must leave over a small amount. The Kama, and the Gemara now asks, the Talmud asks, okay, so now we're getting down to practical rules. Rabbi Yehoshua has concluded that this is the way in which we memorialize the temple and the destruction of the temple all the time, is that when we build our houses, we have to leave over something to say our house is incomplete because that house is incomplete. The temple is incomplete, and just like if we were missing the temple and we're missing the meat of the temple, we might have thought for ourselves to skip meat. So too, we are missing the temple, we are missing a completed building, so too our buildings should be incomplete. And in terms of the practical halacha, and this is actually well known to some because it's famously called the Amma al Amma. So the Gemara asks, Vikama, how much is this? How much is a small amount? Amar Rav Yosef, Rav Yosef said, Amma al Amma, 1 cubit by 1 cubit. So somewhere in the house at this stage of the Talmud's discussion, there should be, you know, 1.5 by 1.5, 1 foot by 1 foot, 2 feet by 2 feet, somewhere around there. You should just have a little square that is not plastered, it's unfinished. And asks the Gemara further, what else do we know about this law? Rabbi Chista said, he added, this should be opposite the entrance so that it's visible to all. Amar Rav Chista keneged hapetach. That it should be somewhere where right when you walk in, you're immediately struck by this, so everybody is aware that this is something that is there, and it's there purposely, and it's there to show that we are mourning for the destruction of the temple. And although this seems like a bit of a long-winded discussion back and forth between Rabbi Yehoshua and these people who had decided to take on all these practices, it actually gives us, and it's going to help us out with understanding the purpose of such a Zecher Lechurban, such a, again, Amma al Amma, cubit by cubit section of the house that is unfinished, in the following way. The Torah tells us, okay, one of the early halachic codes about in the 1300s, Mishecharav Habayit, from the destruction of the temple and on, Tiknu, the sages established, Shebechol Devar Simcha, and we're in source number 4, that for any happy occasion, Sheyeba Zecher Lechurban Habayit, there should be a remembrance for the destruction of the temple. V'alkein, and therefore Amru, they said, Sad adam et beito besid. A person can plaster their house. And the question really is, what is the nature of the fact that we're leaving over this section of the house? And that's really what we're going to explore over the next 20 minutes or so, hopefully, depending on how quickly we go. But the question arises as follows. When we looked at the original verses that we had, okay, and we looked at Tehillim, and we looked at Rashi, in sources number 1 and number 2, what was the purpose of doing these practices? remembering, im eshkachech Yerushalayim, not to forget. That's one element of this. And this is what the Tur invokes in source number 4. He says, once the temple has been destroyed, we cannot forget. We must always remember. So, when there are happy occasions, as Rashi mentioned, such as a wedding, such as many, many other things that the Talmud there mentions. So, some examples may be even going further within painting a house or tiling a house, but the Gemara and even Shulchan Aruch, the Code of Jewish Law, talk about, you know, setting a beautiful table, making jewelry, weddings, music is related to this. There are so many times where we should be happy, and we say we don't want this happiness to be complete, we want there to be a memory of what's going on. And that's one part of it, as a memory. Now, does memory necessarily mean mourning? No. I can remember something right now, we're remembering. And we can learn about things, we can show things, we can have remembrances that don't necessarily go along with mourning. On the other hand, when we look back at that entire discussion between Rabbi Yehoshua, and these people in the Talmud that we just read, we're seeing something more than just remembering. We're seeing an element of mourning, saying if we can't have it there in the temple, in the Beit HaMikdash, we can't have it here either, right? Or if that house can't be built, my house can't be built. And that's something which we're taking an action on that's beyond just simply reminding ourselves that the temple is not built, but rather showing by some action that I can't build my house while that's not built. It's a type of mourning. And therefore, a few weeks ago, I received a present from someone. And what they gave me was, I see this, you know, it was a big frame. They wrapped it up very nicely. And I take out this frame, I think maybe it's a picture frame. You know, I just had a baby. Maybe someone thinks I want to put pictures of my baby up in my house or something like that. And I open it up, I unwrap it, and I see this beautiful, gorgeous writing of the verse, Im Eshkachech Yerushalayim, with a backdrop of the city of Jerusalem. And it says on it, plated in 24 karat gold. So the question now arises. If the purpose of such a Zecher L'Churban, which literally means something to memorialize the destruction of the temple, is all about remembering it, is all about saying, you know what, it's true, we don't have a temple, that's really sad, so I'm going to put up my 24 karat, you know, gold Im Eshkachech Yerushalayim on the wall. On the other hand, that doesn't seem to strike me as any sort of mourning. That's very beautiful. People look and say, wow, that's gorgeous. Right? I mean, we can even look around us here. We have some very beautiful pictures of Yerushalayim all around us. And they don't necessarily, although they should, make us feel, oh, this is terrible destruction. There's some beauty to them as well. There is beauty even to Yerushalayim as it is. And yes, that makes us remember that we don't have a temple, that we don't have a Beit HaMikdash. But is that really the way that this particular halacha works? And for that, we're going to look at a few of the different applications of this question as to whether it requires an element of mourning or just a remembrance, and how that might apply to various scenarios relating to the Zecher L'Churban, what we call something which memorializes the destruction, but actually may be for mourning. And the truth is, if you go back, about 500 years, we already see mentions all over the place that people had a different custom. Although the Talmud mentions that it was preferred to just simply leave it unfinished. So that means you'd see really the inner foundations of the wall. You may see stones that the house was built of, that the house was built from. But you wouldn't really, you know, have a section that was white and not colored in any way. You just have really something completely unfinished sitting there in front of your door. However, about 500 years ago, we see the practice begins that people would actually simply color it in black. Okay, they would darken this area. Dark black, obviously, again, also is a sign of mourning in some way. And rather than leave it unfinished, it would be finished, but simply painted a different color in this way. And always ready to defend the common practice, the Aruch HaShulchan, living all the way 150 years ago, so this is literally hundreds of years after practices like this started developing, he cites earlier authorities who had expressed that this practice of darkening this area was inappropriate. Many, many authorities, you can give an entire list. I mean, we'll see one of them and sort of his reasoning as we go through the Levush and the next source. But the Aruch HaShulchan tells us as follows. Ugdolei Achronim, the greatest of the later authorities, Katbu, they wrote, Delo mahani mashe mashkirin amal ama. From a technical halachic perspective, many, many of the authorities wrote that it is improper to leave it darkened in. Eladavka lehaniach reik misid. Specifically, it must be left devoid of plaster. Says the Aruch HaShulchan, but ve'etzleinu, in our communities, mashkirin, we darken it. We color it in. There is plaster there. There is paint on it, but it's in a different color. It's clear that we're leaving it in some way. And his logic is, v'kevan dirigilin shezehu ha'heker. However, since people regularly, and since people know that this is always the way that we're showing that we're mourning for Jerusalem, malanu imko v'imko, asks the Aruch HaShulchan. Why should I care if it's finished, if it's unfinished? At the end of the day, what are we accomplishing here? We're remembering. So if we remember it when it's unfinished, that's one way to remember it. If we remember it when it's black and dark, that's another way to remember it. That's one approach to take. Really focusing, as we said earlier, on the memory element. We want to remember. Now, truth is, black is also something which is sad, which shows mourning. That's not to say that this, you know, is the same thing as a very beautiful image, putting that up in its place. But on the other hand, he emphasizes that depending on communal practice, we can say that this works for the halacha of having an amal ama, having a zechar lechurban, memorializing this simply by putting up whatever will make people think of Jerusalem. On the other hand, going back a few hundred years, to the start of that, we have the Levush. The Levush in source number 6 lived in the 1500s. And he writes the following, and this was something in practice that was just beginning in his days. He writes, "Venerally, it seems to me, Mashenohagim achshav habonim batim, those who build houses now, umisayedim oto, and they plaster it, shemisayedin umachayirin oto kulo, and they will actually plaster and paint the entire house, ve'achar kach, and only afterwards, mashkirin ama al ama b'shichur k'neged ha'petach, then only afterwards do they go and they paint a black square in front of the door, delo yafehim osim." Says the Levush, this is inappropriate, and this is one of the authorities that the Aruch HaShulchan was responding to in the previous note. And you know what the Levush's argument is? He says, ki adaraba. It's accomplishing the opposite effect of what we would have wanted. Hashichur zeh eino megane et habinyan. This darkening does not make it look ugly, does not make it look worse. Aval miyafehu umisameach alev kishar tiyurim hanaim. It actually makes people happy. Apparently, having this black square there was not something that reminded people necessarily of mourning, but actually it kind of looked cool. I could see this in modern design, you know, a black tile. Maybe, perhaps, this is what the Levush seems to be understanding was going on. Really, quite possibly, what he's trying to say is that people were doing this to avoid leaving it unfinished. Perhaps this was the reason why he was so opposed to it, but he says, that's much more beautiful. We wanted the house to look ugly. If the Beit HaMikdash is all a bunch of stones, then our house should be left in that fashion as well. However, no, says Levush, therefore you cannot simply color it in black. V'chazal amru, and the rabbi said, he said, if you're looking for the technical halacha, how can you fulfill this requirement as outlined by the sages in the Talmud? They wrote, mishayer bo ama al ama, we must leave it that way, klomar shemanicho kach mikulkal uvilti mitukan, that it should be left completely unfinished. It should be left in ruins. That's what you have to do in order to fulfill this ruling. And therefore, what's the purpose of that? Kedei leganot habinyan ulshaber libo. The purpose of this, says the Levush, in a slight change to what we've been talking about until now, is actually to make the person upset. Specifically, says the Levush, it's supposed to be ugly. Leganot habinyan. It's supposed to remind us of the destruction of the temple because we feel, ugh, this is terrible. You know what else is terrible? That we don't have a Beit HaMikdash. And this is his take in Shemitoch Kach Yizkor HaChurban, through this brokenheartedness. That's how the temple will be remembered. However, Uv Shivron Lev, Velo She'yapehu V'yizkor Mitoch Simchat Lev, nearly says, not though that someone should beautify it and remember the Beit HaMikdash because of the beautiful drawings that we have. That's not appropriate, says the Levush. And here we again really see the extension of what we talked about earlier. On the one hand, it's all about remembering the temple. And the truth is, again, the Aruch HaShulchan may be looking at this as something sad or upsetting as well. However, the Levush says, no, it's specifically to make it look ugly, to make it look bad, and many people follow in that way. And in terms of fulfilling the actual halacha, the Levush seems to have a bit of a leg up in that he says, the Talmud specifically tells us, l'shayer, to leave over an unfinished portion. And again, if people were doing this so as to avoid leaving over, they said, well, instead of leaving over, I'll just color it in black. I mean, listen, we've got little pieces of black up all around us. Black is not necessarily ugly. Black is beautiful. So if that's the case, perhaps this was something that the Levush may have been opposed to for that reason. And here's where it comes into a number of contemporary applications, whether or not it's simply about memorializing and for us to remember the Beit HaMikdash, or if it's all about making us sad, and through that sadness we remember the Beit HaMikdash. So a very interesting question comes up. What if someone lives in the old city of Jerusalem? Do they need to put up this amal amah, cubit by cubit, remembrance for the Beit HaMikdash, which was in their backyard? Or can they go on without it? And if we look in Piskei Tshuvot, which is a contemporary, book which lists, it's really a compendium of comments by a lot of the later authorities to the halacha, to the Shulchan Aruch. And he writes, and we'll read the English here, know that there is no difference between Israel and the diaspora in regards to a zecher lechorban, a reminder of the destruction. And also in Jerusalem, may it be rebuilt, they keep the custom to leave over a cubit by cubit unplastered. And he says, this is the practice even in Jerusalem today, and we should know that there is no difference between Israel or anywhere else. Just because you live in Israel doesn't mean you're exempt from this law. On the other hand, he says, v'yesha mevi'in b'shem ha'gaon, Rabbi Akiva Yosef Schlesinger, there are those who bring in the name of Rabbi Akiva Yosef Schlesinger of blessed memory, who is the author of the book Lev HaIvri, that in the holy city of Jerusalem, may it be rebuilt, there is no obligation to make a reminder of the destruction, since they see the destruction with their eyes. Rather than walking in your door and seeing an unfinished, you know, unplastered area in front of you, if you walk outside your door, you will also see something, an unfinished building. And because these people, he says, live in Jerusalem, they don't need to fulfill this requirement because they have it standing. There's always that reminder that the temple is unfinished and unbuilt right in front of them. And although, again, it seems to be that people don't have to practice this way, this is certainly based on that prior discussion. Whether or not it's something that just needs to remind us and even sadden us, and it's possible that this would even be going according to both cases, but at the end of the day, no one did anything to make their house uglier. No one did anything to destroy their house in this fashion, and therefore, he suggests that it's enough just to be reminded of the sadness of the destruction of the temple by being able to see it with one's own eyes.
May I ask you, where did he live?
So this is someone who lived, you know, about 100 years ago. Okay, and this was his opinion. It seems that this was, you know, not something accepted, but rather his personal, you know, understanding of this law. What is interesting is that now we get down to the case that I mentioned. What about the 24-karat, you know, beautiful Zecher Lechurban picture? Many people, I was actually recently at a Judaica store, and I saw someone come in and ask the store owner for options for a Zecher Lechurban. You know, what beautiful things can you give me in order to fulfill the letter of the law here and have this section of my house? And I was actually reminded of something very beautiful that I saw, which is not directly related, but is in some ways related, which I was once in the house of a painter. That was this person's profession. They were extremely artistic. And what they did was they truly left over a Zecher Lechurban right at their door, completely unfinished, unplastered and everything, a nice big section. And what they did was underneath it, they drew two little poles on the bottom of the square, right? So if we imagine that we have, this would be our Zecher Lechurban, they drew poles here and here. And right next to that square that they had left unfinished, there was another square, also with little poles, and there were people supporting the poles, by the way, I should say, both for the empty part as well as for the next thing over. There was another little thing on poles, and it was a picture of a finished Beit HaMikdash that this artist had drawn, saying, waiting, you know, the people were waiting to take in that picture to replace the unfinished, you know, sort of building that they had right there, which I thought was very clever, and both fulfilled absolutely, according to all opinions, the idea of Zecher Lechurban, but also reminded us of what we have to look forward to. But many people are looking for creative ways to have this not ruin their house, because they really don't like it, especially, you know, people may be entertaining guests who would be hard to explain this to, or whom, you know, might think that it's a silly thing, and therefore sometimes people try to avoid having to fulfill, you know, leaving this, you know, completely unfinished, and therefore they come in looking for more creative ways to remember the Beit HaMikdash. So what about that case? So he cites the Mishnah Brura, okay, also dealing with 100, 150 years ago, who writes, and we'll read the English again, and that remaining section should be without plaster, and not like those who make a cubit by cubit colored in, which is also like painting it. Okay, and he's just citing, basically summarizing what we've talked about until now. And there are places which darken it and write on it reminder of the destruction, and one should not protest against those who are lenient. He cites a variant of this minhag, of this custom, where people would actually write the word Zecher Lechurban on this black section. And he says, although there are those who oppose this custom, there are also those who uphold it, and one should not protest if he sees people that have this darkened area that says Zecher Lechurban, or remembrance on it. And he says also, see Shar HaTziyun, note 9, where he defends this practice. Shar HaTziyun, by the way, going back to Rabbi Torchiner's shir, now that we know what a Tziyun is, Shar HaTziyun is where the Mishnah Brura brings all of his different references. He gives you the notation of where was this, where was this, where was this. Anyways, continues the Piskei Tshuvot, and many pious and accomplished people act in this manner, and we have found various other customs, how they would create the reminder of the destruction, such as by writing the word Jerusalem on the wall opposite the doorway. So right when you come in, you get, boom, Jerusalem, right in front of you. We have other examples, or they would draw or hang an image of the western wall or temple, like I'm talking about, or any other similar things that remind us of the destruction of Jerusalem. In fact, the Stei Chemed, also not that long ago, within the last 200 years or so, writes about a practice which he saw where people would leave this blank and they would actually write poetry about the loss of Jerusalem on that section of the wall. So there were very, very many customs which people had, which they created things that were in fact more meaningful for them by adjusting this halacha. And, you know, his conclusion is that, however, ideally one should only follow the simple understanding of the Talmud and the authorities to leave over a cubit by cubit without plaster, without any drawing, coloring, image, or writing, even if the drawing does not cover the entire area of the cubit by cubit. And his conclusion is that, again, at the end of the day, we should certainly be concerned for those authorities who said to follow the simple reading of the Talmud and to leave over this section. On the other hand, you know, there are those who have certainly, throughout the generations, done similar things to this and put up emotional pictures, emotional, you know, variants of this leaving over the house unplastered as a way of reminding them of the temple. And again, if anybody has, you know, specific questions, they can, of course, approach their rabbi. But we should note a couple more things as we finish this discussion. And that is specifically to say that although we've discussed this question of the, you know, is it a remembrance versus a mourning, we shouldn't forget and think that just because someone sees a beautiful picture, there won't be any mourning involved. When someone does look up towards something beautiful, or a heartfelt poem that's written on their wall that reminds them of Jerusalem, it's true their house may not be as damaged. But when they get back to that point, there's the same emotional response. The purpose of remembering Jerusalem, we must not forget, is not just for the sake of memory, but also for the sake of that mourning over it. The mourning need not be expressed, according to these opinions, by actually damaging one's house. The mourning can also be expressed by the feelings even a beautiful picture will cause us to feel. And if that's the case, we can't forget what the purpose of this is all about. It's not simply to remember, but to also feel that mourning. And for some people, for some of us, for most of us maybe even, in order to feel that mourning, we have to act it out in some way. We have to make our house uglier. We have to take some sort of action. We have to put ashes on our head at the time of a wedding. We have to sing Imesh Kachech. That may be the only way that we can properly mourn for it. But for other people, and for the elite among us, sometimes even seeing a beautiful picture like that can really evoke those same emotions that will cause our mourning and accomplish really the same goal. And specifically, I think in a lot of these cases, that was the motivation behind these practices. It wasn't always the people trying to get out of making their houses uglier. That's not what it was, but rather it was a connection to this sadness, to Jerusalem, that caused them to do this. And I'd like to conclude with another pasuk from Sefer Yeshaya, from Isaiah, that's actually cited by the Talmud later on. Also a song, although a slightly more upbeat song. Rejoice with Jerusalem, be glad with her, all that love her. Rejoice for joy with her, all that mourn for her. And Malbim, in his commentary to this verse, tells us something very, very beautiful that we should remember as we finish our talk about the Zecher L'Churban and leaving our houses unfinished. And he writes, all those who mourn over it, we'll read the English in source number 9, that they made outward signs to show the mourning, such as wearing sackcloth and ash, and similar practices. We know about all the different practices that people can do to mourn something. And people that did that for Jerusalem, says the Malbim, those people, so will they show now outward signs to show the joy. As it says, oil of joy will replace mourning, or will replace, as we're going to see, ashes. And it's measure for measure, really, to say that people who perform outward showings of mourning for the Beit HaMikdash will actually merit to have, in the time that the Beit HaMikdash is rebuilt, that same opportunity, that same beautiful thing that they were doing in mourning as happiness. And as the Pasuk tells us in Yeshaya, to appoint unto them that mourn in Zion, to give unto them a garland for ashes, the oil of joy for mourning, the mantle of praise for the spirit of heaviness. And so too, those people who remember Jerusalem by putting up not necessarily the most beautiful looking things on their walls, and not necessarily going for that beautiful Beit HaMikdash picture, but leaving it blank and showing their mourning, perhaps the Malbim is telling us that when the Beit HaMikdash is rebuilt, we will have that beautiful picture up there, and not the beautiful picture of only the Kotel HaMa'aravi, the Western Wall, but a beautiful picture of the finished Beit HaMikdash, and may we merit that soon in our days.
Amen.